Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 309. In the news this week, just want to let you all know, I'm actually recording this and mastering it the night before I bring the main production computer in to the technicians. So that's happening tomorrow. I'll find out more about our production and how we're going to move forward, and I'll keep you all informed. But this week, we've got an excellent episode with award-winning author Brother Bull Garlington, as well as Mike Jarzabek, who is an avid Star Wars fan, theorist, pretty much anything you want to know. But he also does this great job of connecting the esoteric concepts within Star Wars, the hero's journey, and Freemasonry. And he did a piece for us on the Midnight Freemasons a couple weeks ago, and I hope you guys kind of liked that and maybe got a little taste of what we're going to talk about in this episode. And it's a three-way interview. I think you're really going to like it, and I want to get right into it right now. All right, everybody, we're back this week, and we've got a great episode. We're going to be talking about Star Wars and Freemasonry. We've done a show about it in the past, and it's been largely a very popular subject, especially with the new films coming out. And this week, I've got two guests on with us in this program. I've got Mike Jarzabek, who is a Star Wars enthusiast and a brother of the craft, and I've also got Bull Garlington on, who's an award-winning author. And he actually is a brother here out of Chicago. And if I could turn it over to Mike Jarzabek just for an intro and let people know a little bit about yourself.
I'm a Mason in Brigham Lodge in Ludlow, Massachusetts, and past district deputy and the current chairman of the Lodges of Instruction, which is our candidate and officer instruction program in Massachusetts.
Very cool, very cool. And then, so how did you get into Star Wars? What kind of in brought you into Star Wars and then kind of saw these Masonic connections?
I think in the beginning, just growing up in 70s and early 80s and between toys and movies, and then just kind of putting two to two together, and also kind of becoming a fan of Joseph Campbell's work, kind of tied it all together for me.
Right on. So I'll shoot it over to Bull Garlington. Again, award-winning author. It's really cool to get you on the show to talk about this stuff. He's got a couple books out. The newest one's called The Full English. It's a travel memoir of all things. I actually gave Bull's first book to my wife to read, and then she told me, you have to read this. It was called Death by Children. It's absolutely a hilarious book.
Not an instruction manual.
Yeah, right. Not an instruction manual, right? So they have a thing here called IndieFab. And so in 2013, it was actually the humor book of the year. So it was really kind of cool. I just want to say thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
He's also a past master as well of Kelvin Park Willing Masonic Lodge 1075. And he does a lot of great talks around the Chicago area, northern area of Illinois. So if you guys actually get a chance, get a hold of Bull. We'll put all of his contact info and how you can get a hold of his books and whatnot in our show notes. But the reason I asked Bull on the show was because he actually does a presentation, and I asked him, can you do the presentation on the show? And he said, nah, it doesn't really work that way. But nonetheless, I think it would be really cool. I thought it was going to be really cool to get him on the program, share what he can with it. So I guess we'll just jump right into it. Bull, can you tell us a little bit about the presentation that you do so that we kind of get an idea of where you come from?
Sure. First of all, even though I'm known as a humorist, I'm kind of more of a generalist, so I've had short stories published in literary magazines, and I've had articles published all over different magazines and such, and the lens through which I kind of view the world is the lens of story, and so I'm always looking at things with story in mind. It's how I explain the world to myself, and so I was, of course, Joseph Campbell's hero journey, the heroic cycle that he kind of established, is something that's always been a big part of my point of view. And he established this in his book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. It's called also the monomyth. And I saw that, and I immediately realized that kind of sounds like what we do in Freemasonry through the three degrees. And so I sat down and I tried to lay the template of Freemasonry's journey over the template of the hero's journey by Joseph Campbell. And I realized that they synced together almost perfectly. And so when I saw that, I thought, wow, this is a great way for people to understand the kind of the enduring power of Freemasonry and of initiatory societies in general. And so that's kind of what got me into it. And then the hero cycle is pretty commonly explained in high schools and in colleges using movies. And for a long time, they were using Star Wars. Lately, they've kind of moved over to The Matrix.
Right.
But Star Wars, George Lucas says this up front. He goes, he wrote this movie to follow the hero journey. And it goes through it step by step. And so that's why I picked Star Wars.
I've been trying to figure out a date that we can get you to come out and do it out at Waukegan or somewhere here in the Northeast area, because great speaker and then also the topic of Star Wars, you know, you're going to get a really good crowd. But in any case, we'll just kind of kick it off here. So in the past discussions we've had about kind of the esoteric nature of Star Wars and maybe how that relates to Freemasonry, this kind of symbolic idea of the hero's journey, this idea that we're put on a path and there are small parts of Freemasonry, just on the surface level, if you will, that really blend into, I guess, kind of the way this all works. Like we have a mentor. To describe the hero's journey as a birth, I've seen it a million times, like explained with like the Lion King, the evil uncle kills the dad, the kid's got to grow up, he gets a mentor, he avenges his father, he goes through, you know, a transformation, he dies, he comes back reborn kind of thing. And so Mike, if you want to just kind of give a little bit of a primer to start us off to dive into some areas of this.
Totally agree with Bull as far as the Joseph Campbell parallels. And I think what's challenging when looking at Masonry and comparing it to Star Wars is, who's the hero in Star Wars? A lot of people would say Luke. Sometimes it's probably Leia. Sometimes it's Han Solo. But I think Lucas himself has come out and said that Darth Vader is actually the hero in Star Wars. And he's a hero in the tragic sense. And I think that's where you start to draw some more interesting parallels to Masonry.
Sure. I read an interesting article recently, actually, and he's probably going to love this. There was a really great article about Star Wars and how maybe Vader is the hero in this journey, right? But it starts with Anakin. And he kind of talks about how maybe when Anakin, this dying of his, that in the end of the last, spoiler alert, right? Darth Vader dies, episode 6. He gets burned.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, no. So he dies, right? They burn his body. And in this one really interesting article, he actually talked about the possibility of, because Anakin is immaculately conceived, supposedly, right? That the good side and the bad side actually, you know, separate and go back into the universe and come back in, and maybe like the dark side is Snoke and maybe the light side is Rey. He goes into kind of this really interesting parallel. I'm curious if either one of you have some thoughts on maybe this kind of transformation process, or even going from Anakin to Vader. Like, how do we see that as a transformative process, either symbolically, esoterically, that can relate to Freemasonry somehow?
How much can I talk about in terms of Masonry?
You can talk about Masonry as much as you want. Now, I will say that our audience is largely Masons, but we do have some profane that do listen.
So I was going to say that I think in some ways, Anakin and Vader, he's a little bit of Theseus's ship, right? Because how much of him is mechanical and how much of him is his human soul? And so I think that's where the interesting part is, who died on the Death Star. They left the body, evidently, although it wasn't maybe that clear, they left the body on the Death Star. They burned his armor on the moon of Endor. So what died? So you're right. And I think the fact that we're seeing the helmet be portrayed as is kind of interesting, and it might play in somewhere in the future.
So, Bull, what were you starting to say?
Well, now you go back to talking about who's the hero, Luke or Darth Vader or Leia or whatever, and that kind of comes to something that I cover in the talk that I give, and that is there's two ideas inherent in what you're talking about right there. And the first one is that the hero's journey, we all look at it and see it as a circle and as a wheel, but it's not. It's actually a spiral. And so you do the hero's journey more than one time in your life. And so from the point of view of looking at a story, like Star Wars as a story, yeah, it's a circle. But within that, when you're looking at Anakin and you're looking at Darth Vader and you're looking at the progress of that character and that person's life, it's a series of circles. It's a series of heroic journeys. And so as he begins one journey as Anakin and comes to a new understanding, he leaves his ordinary world and goes through the special world and sort of comes back. He's at a new place there. It's not like everything stops. Now there's a new adventure. He keeps going. And so having said that, what I like to say is that really every person in that movie is going through their own heroic journey. And so there's not just one hero in Star Wars, and that's the beautiful thing about it. Luke is a hero, so is Leia, so is Darth Vader, so is Obi-Wan. We focus on Luke's journey as the narrative structure of the film, but Darth Vader clearly has, he is clearly at some point in his journey as well. And the movie is about where all those different spirals and all those different trajectories that people are taking intersect. And that's the story that we get to see.
Yeah, I can definitely see how the different layers of these different heroic journeys layer on top of each other. And yeah, we're just getting one small slice of time here. And we kind of witness all of these elements together. And we go back to something like the story of Anakin, you know, this these first three films. Well, I shouldn't say first. Numerically, the first films, the second set of trilogies that were produced. We look at Anakin Skywalker as this kind of messianic figure. And I see Anakin Skywalker and maybe how that relates to the transformative process from like maybe episode one to episode three, this idea that he becomes Vader. And then when at a point in episode six, do you guys see him maybe coming back? Is he becoming more human again, coming back into balance?
Well, I mean, in his journey, you could look at that as part of the, as he's going around to the, like the third threshold, and he's had sort of a death moment. And in a way he's going into apotheosis a little bit, which is, I hate to say redemption, but it's very close to that.
Right.
And I think what, at that juncture, every hero still has one last decision they get to make. And there's still a possibility of their story branching into a different direction. For the most part, they've completed this journey, but there's still decisions to be made, and there's still opportunities for them to make poor decisions and opportunities to make good decisions. There's also, this is the moment where there's an opportunity to look back on regrets. And I think so. There's a bundle of storytelling going on in that scene where Vader is kind of thinking to himself, shoot, maybe I went the wrong way. And he's having a few regrets, and he wants to come back to his more human and more gentle self. And that's a lot to pack into those few moments, but I do think It's kind of there.
So, Mike, I'd like to turn it over to you for a few minutes and get some, if you want to bring up some key things that you think make these kind of parallels. I want to give you a few minutes to have the floor and really kind of dive in a little bit.
I think along the lines of what Bull was just saying, some of the most interesting parallels are one that Vader is buried three times. And you talked about his death, but that's really, I mean, he died as a man, you would think, when Obi-Wan and him get in a fight by the volcano. And he's reborn as an android or part man, part machine. And then he dies again there. And again, he's buried at the Death Star. And then he's also buried on the third moon. But where I find the interesting parallel is that, A, he's a widow's son in probably the more general sense of, I mean, his mother didn't, her husband didn't die.
Right.
But he doesn't have a father.
Or maybe he did. I just, correct. I don't know if I buy into the messianic piece of, you know, she just says he didn't have a father. Well, does that mean like dad skipped town?
I think that's sloppy storytelling from Lucas.
He didn't have a dad.
It's really just Lucas trying to throw in the Osiris thing, the virgin birth that is prevalent in so many different origin myths, not just in the Judeo-Christian one, but in, you know, Mithraic and some of the other ones. There's the virgin birth is just common. And I think that was just Lucas throwing that in there because it doesn't, nothing really happens when she says that. No one discusses it. No one's like, oh my God, are you serious?
Right.
You're just kind of like, meh, whatever.
and if you didn't get the Osiris reference, then he just keeps on cutting arms and body parts off until you get it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Osiris thing works out really well, actually, with Star Wars, but maybe that's another podcast.
Yeah, I mean, but we can go into that a little bit, maybe, because traditionally, I think the third degree really, there are really some thick Egyptian influences within that third degree. And when we talk nothing particular about maybe the way Osiris is cut up into pieces or whatever, but, you know, one conjures the image of Obi-Wan Kenobi essentially dismantling Anakin Skywalker by the volcano, telling him, "I loved you. You know, you were my brother." And, you know, interestingly enough, Osiris killed by his brother, chopped into pieces. And then what happens? You know, he's buried into a pillar, kind of transformed. There's all kinds of crazy stuff.
Well, his wife puts him back together.
Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's, to me, that's one of the earlier analogies for personal transformation and transmutation.
I like the word transmutation.
In order for you to move, I mean, they use morphology because that's how people understand things. It's a really clear and definitive metaphor for this thing. And that's the beautiful thing about story and the beautiful thing about the heroic journey is story, like symbols, is a great way to pack a lot of information into a small space. And when you tell the story and people experience you telling that story, they're unpacking all that information. That's why myths are enduring. And so with the Osiris thing, to me, what you have there is one of the earlier examples of teachers and leaders trying to give people an idea that they need to, in order for them to progress and to grow, they have to sort of kill their old selves, and they have to dismantle their current vehicle, so to speak. You have to take yourself apart in order to be put back together again for the next stage. And so there's that whole transformative thing, that whole transmutation thing where you go from, you know, chrysalis to butterfly. And so I think that's what the Osiris myth is. And I think the reason that they have Isis reassembles Osiris, and I think that, to me, and I'm not a mythologist by any stretch of the word, but I am a storyteller, and to me what that shows is that's another metaphor, and that metaphor is that this is not normally a thing you do alone, and that you are always going to need some sort of guidance and some sort of help. And so anyway, I think that's the Osiris part, and I think it's in Star Wars, everybody gets chopped up. Everybody's missing something, you know? I mean, Luke's missing a hand, and Darth Vader's missing everything, and Obi-Wan gets cut in half. There's a lot of people that are either completely disassembled or in the process of being disassembled. And I don't know how much of that was intentional. And I have never matched their level of disassembly to where they are in the heroic cycle or in the Osiris overlay. But it would be interesting to find out if, as they near complete dissolution, if that's also as they get closer and closer to a rebirth moment. That would be a very cool thing to learn.
Well, I think, too, that they preface all of that by making both Luke and Anakin are masters at putting droids back together, right? They're like master mechanics or master craftsmen. And so all of that kind of has some foreshadowing in that, putting them in that Osiris role.
Man, I never thought of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, like foreshadowing.
And what's interesting is another parallel of the craftsmen is that Lucas is on record as saying that Vader, that the word Vader means father. And some people think that he's full of it and that he made it up later, because it is in I forget what language, but it translates to father. But people also say that the word Abiff translates to father. So they share that parallel as well.
Well, when it comes to things like that, I'm a firm believer in timelessness with mythology and sort of the principle of accumulative math in there. So, I mean, it doesn't matter if Lucas added that later. His myth is constantly being revealed. And if later he says, no, that means father, I don't think anybody should be able to argue with that. You know, it's when you zoom out and look at this thing from a broader perspective of time, the distance between him putting those movies out and then going, no, it means father is immaterial.
So, Mike,
yeah, I agree.
When you talk about some of the, just a spoiler for everybody out there, Mike and I had chatted quite a bit before deciding to put together some sort of episode where we talked about some of these parallels and some of these things. Mike's actually gone pretty deep into some of your stuff. What, Mike, if you could share maybe one or two of the strongest kind of things that you found where you think they're maybe a little bit mind-blowing for people if they were to be able to make these connections.
So I think the thing that I've been dwelling on in the research right now is I see strong parallels between the Death Star and the temple, the unfinished temple, especially the second Death Star, which Darth Vader gets put in charge of halfway through its construction. First obvious parallel there is the fact that it has a point within a circle on it, which someone could say that that's just graphical or whatever, but I'm not really a believer in that. I'm more a believer in Plato's forms, and I think that everything has an illusion back, that whether Lucas even knew about it or not is, to Bull's point, immaterial, because in that creative process, he kind of brought that along. But one of the cool things is that the Death Star is powered by ion, and the ion thing is kind of interesting. I mean, Michael Faraday coined the term in the 1800s, but it goes back before that. And the left side of the two pillars is considered to be ionic, and it's considered to be the feminine side. And some of the things that we looked at were the fact that that's seen that if it's out of balance, that it's destructive. And I think that's what's interesting about the Death Star being a symbol of the monad, is that the monad is not supposed to be destructive, right? It's supposed to be more of a creative force. But then you start to look at whether or not the Empire feels that they're combating chaos, which most Scottish Rite Masons feel that they are as well, I guess. So by the order that they think they're doing the right thing. So the temple as a place where you go and sacrifice things, and the Death Star as a tool to sacrifice planets for the greater good of order in the universe, really isn't that far of a stretch at that point.
It's interesting that you brought up like kind of the monad and being out of balance, and then it's powered by the ion or the ionic, right? This feminine force, but then it's destructive, right? In one of the first scenes of the movie, we watch it destroy Leia's homeworld. Do you think that maybe that any of that kind of what you were talking about with the Empire, and do you feel any of that is transferred or goes forward and goes into the most recent incarnation of the film, like The Force Awakens?
When they made Star Wars originally, Lucas made it to try to be a mythology for that generation who had gotten most of their myths taken away from them, whether they be patriotic myths or religious myths or whatever have you. And I think the same thing kind of goes on now, is that they have to kind of flip that on its head at this point, because the whole black and white cowboy hats and good and evil doesn't really work in our society anymore. And the anti-hero is more of the accepted hero, as you can see with Deadpool and Batman and all those other comic book heroes now, even Iron Man. I definitely think that that's true.
So, Bull, thinking about some of the things that Mike said, and we're looking at Freemasonry, and it's one of these things where I'm not somebody who has ever really looked at Star Wars super esoterically. I was always more of a Star Trek guy. I know. But when I think about stuff, and when I think about Star Wars, there was all this conspiracy, you know, when Force Awakens came out, they had the lightsabers. John Ruark actually was being kind of funny. He's another podcaster in the community. And you know, he was showing how they did the lightsabers, you know, as a square and compass. Are they being Masonic? And I was like, no, they're not, right? Because I just never really subscribed to it. But hearing some of this stuff come from the two of you, I think I'm on board a slight bit here. What other parallels do you think are out there for somebody? Maybe what could you say to sell me on it if I was a Mason who's like, I don't know about this?
Well, actually, I just would like to go ahead and ruin the broadcast right now and say that I don't think that. I don't believe that there are direct parallels to Masonry that were intentional at any point during any of the storytelling of any of the Star Wars movies or in fact, any of the movies that people choose to illustrate the monomyth and the hero's journey. I think there's inadvertent parallels, but I don't think Lucas or anybody else associated with that made direct parallels in the storytelling. I'm sure that in the broad scope of all the people that worked on those movies, there were certainly a lot of Masons in there, and they were probably giggling to themselves the whole time. But I don't think that, you know, when you see things like the cross lightsabers and stuff,
right.
Lucas was not subtle, and frankly, neither is Disney. And there may be stuff in the background that are Easter eggs and stuff, but if they were going to make a point about Freemasonry, it would not be something that you would miss or have to ask about.
So I guess
it'd be really clear and upfront.
If I could, I guess, look at it in a way, maybe not clearly Masonic, right? But when we look at the Masonic degrees and the way we're kind of this initiatory rite, we do have, I think, parallels to the hero's journey that so many films and books exemplify. And just like the way Freemasonry kind of exemplifies those things in its own way. I guess I'm curious to find out what a good solid piece of interesting tidbit that somebody could go off and do some research, maybe to assist them in understanding that a little bit more.
Well, I think the first thing you would do is study mythology and study the hero's journey itself. When Joseph Campbell sort of enumerated the hero's journey, it wasn't really like he was discovering it. He was just the first person to really kind of set it down in writing and say, these are the actual stages, and did the research to prove that and to make it clear that it was correct. But I mean, the hero's journey has existed, and what he called it was the monomyth, which is like basically the uber myth. It's the story that's underneath all other stories. It's why when you see a movie, you'll see a lot of movies or read a book and you go, man, I feel like I've seen this before. And the reason you're thinking that is, the reason you're thinking all these movies have a formula is because even if the movie writers, the authors didn't intend for it to be there, if they write a good story, it's going to hit all these points. And the way that masonry takes part in this, or takes a part of this, is that the monomyth as exemplified in stories is something that the humans have been creating since they could talk. I mean, there's no way to tell when people first started telling stories, but I'm going to say it happened about 3 to 12 seconds after they learned how to talk. And they've been telling stories since they've been able to do that, able to use language in any way. And so that means that since time immemorial, we've been honing this artifact. And this artifact is the monomyth. And we've been working on it to such a degree that it is in every culture, it is intrinsic to the way that they tell stories. And if you try to tell a story and skip any of the parts that are part of the hero journey, people are going to have a hard time buying into that story because they're going to feel that something has been left out. The reason for me saying that is that one of the beautiful things about masonry is that it really does follow the heroic cycle, and it takes the candidate on a journey, really from petitioner through master mason, that in every way that I can't actually discuss right now, sort of takes you through each and every step of the heroic journey. In a way, you as a Mason, from the very beginning of your Masonic career, sort of model the life of the hero. And as you go through the 3 degrees, that's kind of what you're doing. It's like a simulation of a heroic story. And the reason that it is important and the reason that it matters is because one of the things you get to do by going through the heroic, or going through the Masonic journey, is that you get to close that loop in an actual behavioral model. And so you get to go from the call all the way through the return with indications along the way that that's what's happening. Although we use different language, that's what we're talking about. And so there's a sort of, I hesitate to use this word, but there's a sort of closure about that, where the person that's going, the candidate or the master mason is the final product, this little journey that's happened. And when they arrive at that point of being a master mason, there is a sense in their life that they have completed that journey. You know how when you hear a piece of music and you hear everything except the last note, like dun da da dun dun dun, in your mind you just went dun. You just added that last in your mind. Everybody will do that. Well, if you can think of the monomyth in the same way as that incredibly well-known pattern, you know, shave and a haircut pattern, if in your life you don't get to that last part of the heroic journey, then your life is always going to feel as if that last note of shave and a haircut hasn't dropped. And what masonry, and I'm assuming other initiatory societies do, is they take you all the way through in a simulation. And by doing that, they give you that necessary closure. Even though it's simulated, nevertheless, look in the science of this kind of thing. Your body and your mind, and I'm assuming your soul, kind of react to it as if it really happened. And so that's why the monomyth and masonry are connected. And that's why when you're in a movie and you're watching it and it's hitting all the points, you get increasingly committed to that story and increasingly involved in that story. And it's why people's connections to Star Wars are so lifelong. I saw it when I was 12 years old. I'm still freaking talking about it. That's because it hit every one of those invisible buttons I didn't know I had. And so I guess that's kind of my explanation of why masonry is capable of having that sort of enduring effect on people. Because it takes him, it models this amazing journey that every human being secretly really needs to take and complete.
Well said, well said. I loved every bit of that. So, Mike, I want to kind of go back to you now, and I'd like to hear your final takes on it and wrap it up for us, if you wouldn't mind.
I agree with Bull, and I think where Star Wars is important to the modern Mason is that when they develop the degrees, I mean, Preston came along at a very crucial point and kind of wrapped everything up and presented the three lectures that most of us hear nowadays. But to that point, they were kind of scattered. There were different lectures and different lodges. And the first section of the degree is really what mattered. And the second section is more of an explanation from Preston and from Webb later on what that meant. The problem with that is that there's references to Vitruvius, to the Bible. There's direct quotes out of Hamlet in those sections. And most of us nowadays, especially the younger generation, don't have those references to fall back on. I mean, how many people in your lodges knew who Boaz was before they became a Mason? Very important, crucial piece of knowledge for a Mason coming through, but they just don't have that. They don't have that reference point. So that's why I think it's important. Talking about Vader as the anti-hero, I mean, the direct reference from To Be or Not To Be in the ritual was that there was that anti-hero in there, whether it was Hiram or not. And I think it makes it accessible, these central themes that Campbell talked about. Star Wars, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Batman, you name it, any of those widow sons or orphans, Harry Potter. Heck, I saw allusions to it when I watched Tangled with my daughter in a movie theater. they're all saying the same thing. And I think wherever that reference comes in, and if you can see those parallels to it, you can start to understand the degree and what that transformation is to you on terms that are more prevalent in today's society.
Very cool.
And I think that what you just said is really cool because I think you're right, man. I think that Star Wars steps in and replaces a lot of the older literature and stuff that we probably would have been studying if we had a real education. And I think it does a fine job. I think you're exactly right about that. And I don't know if I had an opportunity to make a point. I think the point that I make in the presentation is, why is it important for us to understand the monomyth, which really means why is it important for us to go through the Masonic journey as well? And that is we need to understand our own story. But in doing so, we must realize that every other person we meet is in their own, at some point in their own heroic journey. Every single human being in their own mind is going through this process every moment of their entire life. And so your question is always, when you meet somebody else, once you realize you've been through this, then you must be able to commiserate with them and to understand them and to be less likely to be contradictory to them, and to instead ask yourself, where are they in the journey and who am I in their journey?
Yeah, very profound.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking earlier when you were talking about the fact that we don't know whose hero's journey it is, whether it's Leia's or Luke's or whoever, that they're all going through their own journeys at the same time. And I'm thinking that's like the lodge at a perfect level because everybody's coming to it at their own time, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Mentors, you started out as the initiate, but then you become Obi-Wan later. And I think why Star Wars is more important too is that nowadays, more of the movies are focusing on a female point of view and the female journey rather than the male journey. But that the fact that there's not as much literature out there that's speaking to us anymore as males, and I think there's a different story for a man and for a woman coming up through that their period of growth, things speak differently to them.
Yeah, it certainly echoes a little bit of that in the most recent movies, right, where we dealt with two amazing heroines who basically kicked ass and took names the entire movies. But just fantastic. But to wrap this up, I really just want to say a huge thanks goes out to Michael Jarzabek for coming on the show and putting it out there for us. And then to go over to Bull Garlington, just a fantastic speaker. If you can get him to come to your lodge, if you can squeeze you into his schedule, the man is busy. So I really appreciate you coming on the show. What we're going to do is I want to just tell everybody to head on over to bullgarlington.com. You can check out his media kit there. And also his two books that he's got out right now is The Full English. It's just a really, really funny read. I actually heard a review from Brother Todd E. Creason, who reviewed the book on his website.
Picture was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. You know, Todd is such a silly guy.
He just has a picture of himself with the book, and he just looks like he's been gobsmacked. The book is, for people that are wondering why we're joking, the book is essentially a literary fart joke.
Yeah, I mean, It's hilarious. But again, award-winning columnist and author from Chicago. You got to check that out. And then also his other book, Death by Children.
So for any Illinois Masons that might be attending Grand Lodge this year, I am tentatively scheduled to be the speaker at for the Illinois Lodge of Research there. And the subject, I'll be giving the Star Wars Monomyth Masonic presentation at that. And oddly enough, I'm also the keynote speaker for the secretary dinner. I don't know how that worked out.
It always works out that way.
Right. And I would love for people, if they're going to be down in Springfield, to join me for that. I think it's on the night of the 6th. And I think the ILOR, does they have a whole floor on that weird round building? And I think that's where it's going to be given at. I'm assuming anybody can come. Secondly, I've resurrected an old project. I want to plug it now. And it's a dinner series called Eating Vincent Price. And if you just go to eatingvincentprice.com, you can see some pictures from past events that we've done, and a little bit of explanation of what it is. But it's a luxury dinner series here in Chicago. And I don't remember what the other thing I was going to plug was. I'm assuming people write comments on your podcast, right?
They do.
Okay, here's the question I want them to argue about. All right, because this almost brought the old guys in our lodge to blows with the young guys. Would your lodge, or would you, support an exemplary Star Wars third degree?
Ooh. A Star Wars third degree. If you guys argue about it enough, we'll write it.
I want to be in on that, man. And like, which character plays which part in degree? So I'll leave you guys with that. And again, thank you for having me. It was so great to talk to you. I hope we meet in person someday.
What we'll do is, again, all the links in the show notes will be there. And I have to read this mention from the full English really quick. I just thought it was hilarious. One of the quotes on your website actually is from the Austin Chronicle. It says, "Some kind of relentless, rampaging, kaiju-level fart monster."
Yeah, I cherish that. I really do.
So good.
Crane's Chicago Business said, "Bull is fat," which is also one of the better reviews I've had.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, gentlemen. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. Again, award-winning author, Bull Garlington, author of Death by Children, I Had Kids, So You Don't Have To, which is a hilarious book. Both my wife and I had a blast reading it. Just hilarious stories. And also, he just had another book come out called The Full English, which is another great book. We've got all the information in our show notes, so please check that out. And I'll also have links back to the article that Mike Jarzabek wrote for us on the Midnight Freemasons, so please check those things out. Remember to support the program. If you'd like a pin, you can check those out at wcypodcast.com. That helps keep the episodes alive. And that's it, guys. We'll talk to you later. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.